This week on the podcast, I'm joined again by Denise Gagne. We discuss an article and add our own opinions on what makes a good criminal defense attorney. Stay tuned.
Thanks for tuning in. Host Noah Weil is a licensed attorney admitted to practice in Washington State and the Federal Court of the Western District of Washington. Some guests on this program may be licensed attorneys as well. However, the discussion on this podcast is intended to be informative only and is not a substitute for legal advice for your particular situation. The information may be right or may be wrong. Changing laws and the laws of individual states mean the information presented here may not be accurate. But regardless, and this part is important, neither Noah nor any guest here is your lawyer. If you need a lawyer for your individual situation, you should consult and retain your own attorney.
This is Noah Weil with the Better Know a Lawyer podcast, and I'm joined in the booth again with Denise Gagne. Hi, Denise.
Hello, Noah. Hello, hello.
Hello. And this week, I want to talk to you about the traits of a good criminal defense attorney.
I am so glad that you brought me in because I'm basically an expert on this subject.
You've met a bunch. And maybe you can tell us what those people you've met and have worked with in the past, what they have in common that makes them good attorneys.
Sarcasm, humility, no sense of shame. Those are the things that immediately pop to my mind.
We've got some of that in spades here.
All right.
So the reason that I wanted to talk about this week was because I came across an article on the Huffington Post, and I'll put the link in the liner notes of the episode, where a attorney said, here's the five traits of a good criminal defense attorney. And I see these articles once in a while, and I'm always very skeptical. You know, they're like traits, how to bribe your judge, you know, right. How to slash the brake lines of the prosecutor against you. And I'm always a little skeptical that they are
another silly list.
Yeah, they'll just come up with some stuff and I'll get paid for it. This article I thought was actually okay, but what I want to do is go down the list, see what you think of what this author thinks of good traits, and then we'll see if we can add to that list.
That sounds like a fun plan. I'm stoked for this, Noah.
I am so stoked.
Let's do this.
All right. You ready?
I'm ready, Freddy.
So the article is called Five Ways to Assess Whether a Criminal Defense Attorney is Any Good. Already, I think it's too long a title. So that's a negative for this guy. His titles are too long.
Five traits of a good defense attorney. Boom. Edit.
Five defense attorney good. Go. Done. And no spaces either. Just one
correct
long sequence.
Hashtag.
Search for me on Twitter. Yeah, you couldn't even like enter this article length in Twitter. I think it's too many characters.
Yeah, it's definitely more than 140.
This guy, this Stephen Cooper's an amateur.
Well, but we'll reach out to him after the podcast to give him unsolicited feedback.
Let him know. An article you wrote like a month ago? Let me tell you my thoughts on that. Oh, you've moved on and you're a real person? Okay, well, I'm going to give you my thoughts anyway. Stephen, this one's for you. Here's the first one. Irrespective of payment or a client's guilt or innocence, from the start, a good criminal defense attorney takes steps to ensure the client's constitutional rights are protected and vindicated, and the client is treated fairly by the system. Do you feel that is a trait of a good criminal defense attorney?
Outside,
I know, it's also the longest sentence on earth. This guy with his long...
The overuse of commas, I agree wholeheartedly with the sentiment that no matter what, a defense attorney's role is to protect an individual's constitutional rights.
I agree. And I think that's actually a big concern for a lot of clients, that they feel their attorney is going to be judgmental on them, maybe throw them under the bus if they're actually guilty, or even if they feel they're guilty. I've had clients, I'm sure you've had, where they thought they were guilty, and it turns out they were actually innocent of the crime. I'm so guilty because I was driving, and you know, yesterday I had a bottle of beer. Like, well, actually, hold on.
Hold on.
But it's not the case. And I agree with you that if you start treating your clients differently based on whether they're guilty or not, you're bad at your job.
Very bad. There should not be a difference between the way you investigate, handle, treat, and triage a case, depending on whether or not you personally believe that person is guilty or not guilty. Nothing about the facts of the case changes your obligations as the attorney to protect their rights at all times.
We talked to Eric a few weeks ago where he said, I wish that when they're actually guilty, the attorneys can get together to decide a punishment. And it was cute. You know,
it was
like
adorable.
It was like a child playing dress up. You know, I could just see him in his mom's heels and dress. You know, look at me, I'm a grown up. Because it just doesn't work that way. And the system would utterly fall apart if attorneys treated their clients differently based on whether they're guilty.
Yes.
If you are not able to separate your feelings, then you're not a good fit for the field or at least the case, you know.
Right? I agree.
Yeah.
Very much.
So, and that one you got it right, Stephen, although again, it took you a long time to get there. So do work on that. Okay. Also, I don't know about the payment part. I mean, that's a whole other issue. Guilt and innocence is one thing, but irrespective of payment?
Right.
That seems...
That might be
that's a bridge too far. Yeah.
Hashtag nope. Rewrite.
Hashtag maybe you should consider more fully whether you think that choosing to base your decisions on representation on the payment or lack of payment is in your business's best interest. Hashtag right.
Hashtag did you get paid for this article?
Hashtag is this court ordered? Trait number two. Criminal defense attorneys, like judges, prosecutors, probation officers, and cops, are repeat players in the criminal justice system. Not always, but often. Before a criminal case begins, the defense attorney has established a working relationship with the prosecutor and the other repeat players. So he is saying, again, taking 20 years to get to his point. And then thank you again, Stephen Cooper, for giving us some material
fodder
for our topic this week. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Please keep writing, but do it a little more with brevity. So he's saying, this guy is saying, your defense attorney is good if he or she has been in the court before and knows the judges and knows the prosecutors. What do you think about that, Denise?
I think it's certainly helpful. I don't think it's required. I think everybody's got a first day on the job, not only a first day on the job, but a first day in a particular courthouse. I may have mentioned before to Noah approximately 1,847,000 times and probably a handful of times on this podcast that in a previous life I was a prosecutor for the city of Seattle. I did that job for about 5.5 years, and by the time I saw the light and stepped into the grace of God and realized that everything I'd done before was nothing but a sham in an attempt to criminalize poverty, I switched sides and became a defense attorney. So my first day on the job as a defense attorney, I did not have experience in any other courthouse besides Seattle Municipal Court, which is where I'd been every day, all day, for 5.5 years. Didn't mean that I didn't have experience doing criminal law, but it certainly meant that when I walked into Linwood Municipal Court, when I walked into Kent Municipal Court, when I walked into the Regional Justice Center, there was a learning curve and there were some introductions that I needed to make, and sometimes I couldn't tell who was the clerk, who was the bailiff, who should I talk to, and...
Do you remember when you tried to bribe the judge and it turned out just to be a random probation officer?
Yeah, that was really weird because it was like $100 and he kept it.
Yeah, it was so embarrassing.
Was really angry about
it. Amateur mistake.
Yeah, amateur mistake. But yeah, outside of sort of getting your feet wet with who the players are, the background is absolutely most important, making sure that you know what the rules are, making sure you're complying with your ethical obligations. But I do agree. It's a long way of saying...
Don't get Cooperized here. We got a lot of stuff to go. But I half agree with you and I half disagree.
Okay.
I believe there's an advantage to knowing the people. But like you say, there's new people coming in all the time, especially in King County. Those prosecutors rotate like crazy.
Yes.
It's not even possible to stay on top of all the courtrooms those guys are going to. Felonies, juvenile stuff, all the time. If you need to know a prosecutor before having a case with them, you're going to be out of luck a lot of the time because there's new people coming in all the time. There's a big turnover in there, too. Judges, there's less turnover, but even King County judges rotate. They go to different court, Burien, Kent, Seattle. You hope you know them, but the first time you went to Linwood Municipal, aside from the bribery issue, I'm sure you did a fine job, right? You didn't need to be in there for the first time to know how to do your job.
Correct.
It might have given you some advantages, but I would not say do not hire a lawyer just because they had never been to a court in the first time. And actually, I'll tell you, I had a case one time in OMAC, Okanagan County, the 4-hour drive.
Is that like in Ohio? Where is that?
Might as well be. Super duper eastern Washington. Well, like northeastern. It's weird. Anyway, never been there before. But I treated everything with respect and I did my homework and everything. And they're so casual there that my showing extra professionalism was, I believe, an advantage.
If I remember correctly, I don't want to divulge any confidences, but I think you got your client a really good deal out of NOMAC, didn't you?
I got my client a good deal, and the judge at sentencing went below the agreed deal.
That's right.
And she was very happy about that and all that. But I believe that despite not knowing the players there at all, the way I presented myself and the way I acted was enough to ensure a good result. Okay.
Get you some credibility when you walk through the doors, right. And if you didn't recognize the players and they didn't recognize you when you walked in.
So there are still ways to overcome that disadvantage.
Yes.
But yes, it is nice to know who's involved with what.
I wanted to respond to something you said before about walking into King County District Court and not recognizing the prosecutor because the rotation is so heavy there. I would go so far as to say that if you're going to step inside any of the courts in the King County District Court system, the person you want to know is definitely the clerk, because it seems like the clerks will make your lives easier, especially in those courthouses. And if you don't check in correctly, if you don't file your notice of appearance, if you don't look for a court date with the clerk at the right point in time, they are the ones, actually more so than the prosecutor, especially at the preliminary hearings, who can make you feel a little foolish either in front of the judge or in front of your clients. So my free piece of advice to any new practitioners out there is make sure you familiarize yourself with the clerks. Be extra nice to them.
The clerk is the most powerful person in the courtroom. More powerful than the judge, more powerful than the lawyers. The clerks will make your case great or ruin you completely.
Yes.
Any experienced attorney worth his or her salt will tell you the lower bench where the clerks sit is who you need to make friends with. Be humble, be respectful, ask questions, and things will work out okay for you.
I agree, Noah.
Good point, Denise.
Thank you.
Number 3 from Mr. Cooper.
I'm ready.
A good defense attorney doesn't care if their client did it. So this is interesting because it seems exactly like the first thing you just said. So not only did he take a long time to get there, then he repeated it. But since he was kind enough to rewrite the same thing, I guess we'll talk about it briefly again. Do defense attorneys care if their clients did it?
No.
And if they do care, they shouldn't be on the case.
That is correct.
We don't care. We will fight for you no matter what. We love fighting.
I was thinking about talking to our nanny a few months ago about one of my cases that was just a difficult, and it was an involved case, and I was spending a lot of time in court, and I was carrying a lot of extra stress. So every day when I would come home, the nanny would ask me, how did things go? I would tell her about the case. And she was pretty young and just didn't have experience inside the system. And after one of my long, like, oh, this is so hard, and this is what the judge did, and it was just so difficult for my client, she looked at me with these big, bright, blinking eyes, and she said, yeah, but your client's innocent, right? That's why you're working so hard. That's so great.
Aw. She's playing dress up.
It wasn't the point of anything that I said, but it is surprising to me how many people assume that your work on a case or your dedication to a case will hinge on whether or not you believe that your client is guilty or innocent. And if we haven't been clear up until this point, having discussed it on two different, number one and number three, a good defense attorney does not care, will not care, should not care, and will not handle a case any differently depending on whether or not A, they believe the client is guilty or innocent, or B, if the client tells them, I'm 100% guilty, I want to just throw myself at the mercy of the court. A good defense attorney will still help their client realize that, back up, let's slow down, let's take a look at this, and let's see if there are any opportunities to mitigate the damages here.
Which, incidentally, brings up another point. I don't know how you do it, but I very rarely ask if my clients did it. I never, or almost never say, are you guilty? Did you do this thing? There's occasion where I will need to know what they believe happened to rebut what someone accused them of or something like that. But I'll just never say, you did it, right? You're guilty?
Yes.
I don't need to know. It doesn't change anything for my job. And they don't need to think that I care because I don't.
Right.
So it's just like, I know a lot of the civilians think, oh, well, did he do it? And I'm like, I don't know and I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a job to do.
Yeah, I think that also is a surprising aspect of criminal defense work, because that's rarely, rarely, I think less than 2% ever a part of the conversation is, what did you do? You did this, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just rarely part of the discussion.
I think the most common question I ask my clients is, how do you live with yourself? With all the guilt and sin.
How do you look in the mirror?
The next trait is, a good defense attorney does not accept what is in police and prosecution reports. Denise, do you accept what is in police reports as the gospel truth?
No. And the way I generally couch it when I talk to my client, or even when I talk to opposing counsel, is, I understand the report says ... but I don't take as gospel anything that's written down, because there's just generally a lot more to the story than what the officers made note of.
It is... Police reports are interesting. They're interesting animals. They are designed to make somebody look guilty. Police mm-hmm. officers are trained from the academy how to write a report that makes the person they arrest look as guilty as possible, like a foregone conclusion. Is guilty. Sometimes you get a report where they're like, we don't know if he was guilty. We weren't there. We couldn't tell. Those are really refreshing. But more often than not, I stopped him for speeding. There is this overwhelming smell of alcohol as I
approach. I could smell it. It's 10 feet away as I walk down the open road to
I have never seen eyes more bloodshot and droopy as this person had. They admitted 23 times that they were super drunk.
Yeah.
You know, just like overwhelming evidence. And then the defendant, the client, is playing catch up. They're like, no, that didn't happen. No, that didn't happen. And it's just your word against theirs. So it gets a little confusing. But that being said, police reports can be advantageous. For one, it's a report that's useful. But for another, if they shoot the moon, if they overcommit to it, and then you can establish that they were exaggerating on things, that makes everything else they said that is true look bad, because mm-hmm. you can't know. And third, they can't add worse stuff later. That was their shot. If they say, oh, and also they had a bottle of gin in their lap.
Also, they threw up in the back of my car and it smelled like tequila mixed with vodka.
And it wasn't in the initial report. It seems compelling that it would be, and it's the fact that it's not, it doesn't make you look good.
Right.
So they do their best to make someone look guilty, and that's their one shot at it. So police reports are kind of a baseline for me, where the case is, like, this is as bad as it gets, and then what can we do with it? So they can be ugly to read, but they can be advantageous too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I like baseline because it tells you at a bare minimum what the accusations are. It rarely tells you the full story of what happened. And that's the defense attorney's job, is to get to the meat of it, do additional investigation, talk to other witnesses who might have been at the scene, get surveillance footage, get in-car videos, talk to your client, and create the bigger picture.
I agree. I've had a lot of clients, and I'm sure you've had too, where they read a police report and they just get livid.
Yes.
That is not the case at all. They're making that up. That's not true. Maybe the client's memory isn't as good, or maybe the police officer is making it up, but we've seen enough that we know they're probably not 100% true.
Yeah.
And you just prepare yourself for that.
Here's a lot of gray.
Yeah, a lot of gray. Number five, a good defense attorney uses the word baseline in conversation.
Wow, that's so crazy.
That's crazy.
Like, you knew what was coming.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Stephen. You were just direct. That's the whole entry right there.
Finally.
Yeah, for
point
real.
Number five.
That guy's great. Number six, a good defense attorney will regularly remind and urge their client to exercise their Fifth Amendment right to remain silent, insisting they not talk to anyone except the defense of the investigation. God, I can't even do it in one breath. The sentences are so long. A good defense attorney will regularly remind and urge their client to exercise their Fifth Amendment rights to remain silent, insisting that they not talk to anyone except the defense lawyer and investigator about the allegations. You never met a comma you couldn't add to it. Anyway, so to summarize it, a good lawyer will tell their client to not talk to people about the case.
Yes.
What do you think about that?
Yes. Amen, amen, amen. Exercise that Fifth Amendment right over and over and over. Officer, I respectfully decline to answer any questions unless an attorney is present. Officer, I respectfully decline to do any tests unless I have an opportunity to speak with an attorney first. Many clients think they can talk their way out of a situation. Rarely do situations get better for clients if they start openly discussing the events with police.
Not only do they rarely get better, they oftentimes get worse.
Yes, infinitely worse sometimes.
Your case will never get worse because you're silent.
Correct.
Your case could get a hell of a lot better. Your case might get worse if you talk. So I agree with this guy. You should be quiet. I think it's hard. Police, again, are trained to get people talking, to establish that rapport, and most people who are dealing with the police in that kind of capacity aren't used to it. They're scared. They're nervous. They have this misconception or this cultural thing about officer friendly and police are your friends and be cooperative with the police because they're there to serve you.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're being arrested or you're being investigated, that's not the case. You're the suspect. You're not the member of the community. So button up. Ask for a lawyer.
Yep.
Stop talking. So that's what Stephen had to offer. And there's some stuff about, you know, bribery, which is obviously law school 101. But I was curious what you feel that Stephen didn't say makes a good defense attorney. What other traits can you think of the attorneys you respect that they share?
I started off with a sarcastic comment saying sarcasm is important, but it was only half sarcastic. I do think a sense of humor is pretty key in this line of work. Not only does it help you be relatable to clients, to court clerks, if you know how to be friendly and can crack a good joke, and I think it also helps just deal with the heaviness that comes with, that can come with this line of work. Noah and I today did a client intake on a very serious felony sex crime, and for obvious reasons we can't say any more than that, but I will just tell the listeners that it can be hard to shake the details and shake the heaviness that comes with talking to somebody who is facing such serious consequences and somebody whose life has been so drastically turned upside down by false accusations. So if you have an opportunity to laugh, to shake it off through humor, it can be very beneficial for a variety of reasons.
I agree with that. I like the part where you said you were only half sarcastic, and then you said sarcasm was a trait of a good lawyer, so you admitted you've got some room to grow, and I appreciated the humility there. Maybe humility is a trait. Probably not. It doesn't
really
mesh with what I'm thinking.
Get to where you want to be.
But I think the broader trait is just being sensitive to people, knowing what your client needs. Sometimes they need sternness. Sometimes they need some levity. It's their life at stake, so you should be sensitive to what they need. The jury, how are they feeling? What can you do to make their job easier? Being sensitive to the judge's mood.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, don't give up, you know, give up the fight because the judge is having a bad day. But if you know the judge doesn't like a particular issue or is having an issue with something you're arguing, can you modify it a little bit to get them on your side?
Correct.
Being reading the room, we would call it, being sensitive to that stuff. I feel like a defense attorney is always gathering information, always looking for more info for their clients. And a big piece of information is how are the people you're communicating with feeling and doing? Is what you're doing working? And if not, can you change it?
Mm-hmm. I would agree wholeheartedly, Noah. What else besides humor, reading the room?
I think that the investigation, we've kind of touched on that, but just digging deep, not taking anything for granted, not just police reports, but anything someone says, even your own clients, you can get verification of what they say, that's great. You don't have to mistrust them, but just looking to solidify every aspect of your argument, get the case solid.
Yes.
If you can verify what the opposite side said, that's great. If you've tried, you know, this, just keep digging, keep looking for more and more information.
I think compassion is important too. We talked earlier about, I mean, obviously we don't pass judgment, and it's not going to impact our work on a case whether or not we believe a person is guilty or innocent. But if you have a compassion in your heart for where clients who have mental health issues or who have, especially in our line of work, potentially addiction issues, and you have compassion for what they're working through, it can absolutely build trust, can help them help the client feel more comfortable when they know that you aren't judgmental about what they're going through.
Denise, I thought that was a really stupid comment, but I forgive you because I have compassion.
You have compassion in your heart, yes.
Yes, so you are forgiven.
No sarcasm, though, so you fail on
I'm reading the room.
Number one.
I like that, I do. Another possible trait is courage. Being able to put yourself out there. The defense side of things is often the losing side. Prosecution wins a lot of cases, they win a lot of motions, and it takes some kind of bravery, or stupidity maybe, but either way, to put yourself out there and expose yourself to the scorn of a judge or the scorn of a jury to advance an argument.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe it, if you think it's right, you do it, and you know other people might disagree, but you just got to put yourself out there. And I've met attorneys who are timid, who don't take risks in trial or otherwise, and I think their clients suffer for it.
I agree wholeheartedly. And frankly, it just takes courage to look yourself in the mirror, right?
Yeah.
Knowing that this is the kind of work that we do.
Well, I'm not doing video. I'm doing radio for a reason. Every time there's a mirror, I'm just so duck in my head.
Duck and weave.
No, thank you. Anything else?
No, I just really want to thank Steve, was that his name?
Sure, whatever.
Yeah, the author of that fantastic article that gave the subject matter. And if anyone doubts that we will be contacting him, don't. Very serious about our unsolicited
feedback. We'll let him know. Steve, you keep hitting those books, man.
Lay off the commas.
Yeah, just keep working, doing your best. You'll get there someday. Someday you'll be a real writer. You know, the blue fairy will visit you, and you'll be somebody who can put pen to paper.
Until then, you're
not there yet, but someday, man, I believe in you. Denise?
Until then, we'll keep dissecting each and every one of your articles that touches on criminal law.
Yes, and everybody else's. We'll just keep going down the Huffington Post.
There we go.
I heard Khloe Kardashian was wearing something unexpected.
Okay. I know what I'm going to be doing
as soon as
we get back to the office.
That's next week's. Denise, thank you, of course, for joining me.
Noah, as always, it's a pleasure.
And this is Noah Wild, the Better Know a Lawyer podcast, signing off.